Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you're looking to get up to speed quickly but really understand a complex topic, you're in the right place. We take the source material you give us, cut through the noise, and, well, get straight to the core ideas. Today, we're kind of cracking open the blueprint, you might say, of a forecast that's aimed at a very specific group in the market. Our source is basically the central predictive question pulled from excerpts from Forecasting 2025 House Selling Conditions.
Yeah, and this whole dive is really laser-focused on unpacking that one high-stakes question that this forecast tries to answer. It's all about the homeowner, the seller specifically, and this driving question. Will 2025 be a good year to sell your house?
Right, that's the mission for today. We're not actually looking at the final predictions themselves, you know, the numbers. Instead, we're digging into why that question is so significant. What does just framing it that way tell us about maybe the current market uncertainty? And importantly, what information must the authors behind this forecast absolutely nail down to even try to answer it properly?
Okay, so let's unpack that a bit. The title itself, Forecasting 2025 House Selling Conditions. That signals, well, two big things. Prediction, obviously, that's in the name. But maybe more importantly, it signals specialization. It's not just a general economic forecast, right? It's meant as a roadmap just for sellers.
Exactly. And what's interesting, I think, is how that timing looking ahead to 2025 meshes with that specific focus on selling conditions. It immediately tells you the forecast has to define what good actually means for a seller and, you know, a good year. It's not just about hitting a certain price point. It's really about optimization, about having, well, leverage. Okay, let's define that leverage piece because I think that's crucial. When a homeowner sees this question, will 2025 be good? If we're not just thinking about profit margin, what are the practical sort of on-the-ground wins they're actually hoping for?
Yeah, good point. They're definitely looking for speed and control. Leverage basically means less hassle, less uncertainty. It means getting those clean offers, you know, non-contingent offers. Fewer demands from the buyer. Maybe they waive the inspection or they don't need to sell their own place first. So a good year really implies the seller is kind of in the driver's seat and the whole process moves quickly and smoothly.
That really makes the stakes feel very personal, doesn't it? Not just numbers on a page. And that anxiety homeowners feel like, are we at the top of the market? Did we miss it? That seems to be what fuels the need for this kind of specific forecast. And focusing on 2025 suggests that whatever conditions we have now or had last year might be changing in a pretty fundamental way.
Precisely. I mean, if everything were just stable and predictable, you probably wouldn't need an urgent forecast like this. The very existence of this kind of document suggests that key market factors are, well, maybe at inflection points, you know, moments where things could really swing up or down or even just stagnate. Sellers need a sense of which way things are leaning to figure out their timing, their strategy.
Okay, so if the goal here is to offer some clarity, some certainty, when the market itself might be shifting, then this forecast has to pull together a lot of future economic data, project-specific movements. Mm-hmm. And to do that right, it seems the authors absolutely have to get like three core variables spot on. Let's maybe break those down, starting with, well, maybe the most talked about factor, the cost of borrowing money.
Right, interest rates. And what's fascinating here, I think, is that the forecast can't just predict, say, where the 30-year fixed rate will be in the third quarter of 2025.
Yeah.
It's more about the path it takes to get there. Is the rate holding steady? Is it climbing, you know, squeezing buyer budgets? Or is it actually falling? Because falling rates can unleash a whole wave of pent-up buyer demand.
Yeah, connecting that back to the seller, falling rates generally seem better for them, right? Because even a small drop, like 0.5%, could suddenly bring thousands of buyers back into the market, people who were sidelined before because the monthly payment was just too high.
Oh, absolutely. The interest rate environment is really the master key unlocking affordability. So the forecast has to model different scenarios for how rates might move because that directly shapes the size of the pool of qualified buyers out there. If rates stay high or go higher, that pool shrinks. Sellers might then have to rely more on cash buyers or people with really big down payments, and that definitely reduces the seller's leverage.
So the forecasters aren't just watching the Fed. They have to model how sensitive buyer budgets are. Like, if rates push the typical monthly payment past some critical point in major cities, the forecast would need to warn sellers, hey, expect things to slow down, maybe significantly.
That's exactly right. And, you know, this ties directly into the second really crucial variable the forecast has to tackle. They're intrinsically linked, and that's inventory.
Okay, inventory. Now, when we talk about inventory, It's not just the raw count of houses listed for sale next week, is it? Can we get a bit more specific for the listener? What's the key metric related to inventory that this forecast must get right?
The really critical metric here is something called months of supply. Basically, it tells you how long it would take to sell all the homes currently listed, assuming sales continue at the current pace. Generally, if that number is low, say under 4 months, it's considered a seller's market. But if it starts creeping up towards 6, maybe 7 months, that signals a shift. Power starts moving towards the buyers.
Right. And that's the difference between a seller feeling pretty confident versus feeling, well, pretty stressed out. So if the forecast predicts a sudden jump in months of supply, maybe because high rates finally convince longtime owners it's time to sell, what does that do to the market dynamics?
The leverage can shift almost overnight. If supply balloons, homes tend to sit on the market longer. And that means sellers often have to start making concessions. Things like cutting the price, agreeing to buyer contingencies they might otherwise reject, maybe offering to help cover closing costs. So the forecast needs to predict the rate of new supply hitting the market. That's crucial, especially when you consider, you know, all those homeowners currently sitting on super low mortgages from a few years ago. The 2-3% mortgages. If they start moving.
Wow. Okay. So the document has to pull together demographic trends, interest rate predictions, broader economic conditions, just to project this one number, the likely months of supply in mid-2025. And that basically sets the stage for how competitive things will feel.
It really does. Which brings us to the final foundational piece. And this one connects the first two back to the people involved. Affordability, but really viewed through the lens of the buyer's financial health.
Like that distinction, buyer health. We talked about how interest rates affect monthly payments, but what does analyzing buyer health specifically involve when you're trying to forecast selling conditions for 2025?
Well, it means looking beyond just the national median income figures. Buyer health involves digging into local job markets, wage growth compared to inflation, and really critically, how much cash potential buyers actually have for things like the down payment. Are they having to raid retirement accounts, for instance? Are student loan payments suddenly hitting their budgets again?
So that's where the forecast needs to get really granular, maybe even regional, because a market that relies heavily on, say, tech salaries is going to behave very differently than one dominated by manufacturing jobs, right?
Right.
Especially if rates stay high and pinch purchasing power.
Exactly. If the forecast indicates that maybe first-time buyer affordability has just totally cratered because of the combination of high rates and high prices, well, that means the entry-level homes might just sit there, and that creates a logjam. People wanting to trade up can't sell their current place because the first-time buyers aren't buying, so the whole market kind of stalls out.
Okay, so these three big variables, interest rates, inventory levels, and this idea of buyer affordability or health, they don't operate in isolation.
Yeah.
It sounds like the real power, the real challenge for this forecast is analyzing how they all depend on each other.
That is absolutely the critical takeaway here. The core value, the bottom line of a forecast structured like this, what it's really offering you is a strategic roadmap. It tries to take these three interconnected market levers, rates, supply, affordability, and translate them into practical advice for homeowners about the best timing and preparation for selling in 2025.
And understanding that structure, knowing that the forecast success hinges on getting those three variables and their interactions right, that's really the first step for you, the listener, in using this kind of information well. It clarifies your goal in seeking it out. You're after sophisticated advice on timing, not just some abstract economic commentary. So we've kind of laid out the central challenge here, trying to predict what makes for successful selling conditions for homeowners, specifically in 2025. And we know the key market forces, those three big ones that need to be analyzed correctly to even attempt that goal.
Yeah, and this maybe raises a final important question for you, the listener, to think about as you move forward. We've talked about these three main components: rates, inventory, and affordability. Now imagine the authors of this forecast get just one of those fundamentally wrong. Let's say, for example, they correctly predict rates will be stable and buyer affordability holds up okay. But they completely miss a massive surge of new inventory flooding the market. What's the immediate financial hit, the consequence, for a seller who trusted that forecast and timed their sale based on it?
Right. Think about what that error means practically. If the forecast blows it on the supply side, does the seller just end up getting a slightly lower price? Or could it mean they actually miss their window to sell and move altogether? That right there is probably the real measure of whether a forecast like this succeeds or fails. Mull over how those variables play off each other, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.